Welcome to the Book Chooks, where we talk about books with your host, Librarian Selena.
I love reading books, it's fun. I often read them with my mum. I like reading to explore. There's no better way, I'm sure. I love reading.
Right here on Planet 104.6 FM. Stay tuned for the next half hour as we find more great books to read. Good evening, readers and listeners. Tonight we have Janice Marriott back again on Book Chooks. Now, we didn't get round to talking about her gardening books last time, which I love because I'm a keen gardener. So welcome back, Janice.
It's nice to be back.
Great. So you've written several gardening books. And you've written three for children and four for adults, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about, firstly, your children's ones first, and then we'll get on to your adults ones, which I have read.
Right. Okay, well, the children's ones are ways to encourage children to do things that they might be able to do in the garden. So there's an emphasis on seeds that are easy to handle, mm-hmm. you know, like peas. And there are pages that explain how plants grow and what they need to make them grow well. And there's all kinds of activities to do. You can make bean teepees, or you can write your name on a pumpkin and watch it grow bigger and bigger, and, you know,
cool.
All kinds of things. And they came out originally as two books, and they were so popular that I did two more that were bigger format ones. They've got lots of illustrations, mm-hmm. and diagrams.
Definitely
and
what you need.
Yeah.
And then now you have four books you co-authored with a friend, and they've been very popular, and I've kept up reading them because the first one, Common Ground, was recommended to me by a friend who also loves gardening. She said, you must read this book, and I think you'll really like it. So I thought, oh, okay, what's it about? And she goes, oh, it's about two friends who write to each other and they love gardening. And I thought, oh, okay. Yeah, so when I read this, I was like, oh, this is so cool. I mean, it's about friendship and it's about gardening and it's about the different... Janice, you write to your friend who lives in the country and you live in Wellington in the city. So it's all about that and your lives, and I just found it really, really nice.
Right. Well, it's interesting. That book, of course, wasn't planned.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't sort of say, I think I'll write a book about gardening and I'll find somebody else to write it with.
No.
It's not like that. What happened, it's a really interesting story. It was a long, long time ago, and emails had just sort of been invented. And I got an email from someone I didn't know who was called Virginia Pawsey.
Mm.
And she suggested that we have a school reunion of our class, which was a very tiny class.
Yes.
This was Gisborne Girls High School.
Mm.
And so... six, seven of us just gathered one Waitangi weekend in Gisborne. And because New Zealand's the kind of place it is, small towns, their young people just disappear. They lose their young people, small towns do. And most of us don't ever go back. And so this was a wonderful chance for us six or seven to say hello to each other after about 30 years of never seeing each other, you see. And we'd all grown up, of course. So we sat round this table at the Eastwood Hills Arboretum and we all told our stories.
Yes.
And I told about how I had been, I'd lived in California and I'd lived in London and I hadn't done much gardening.
Yeah.
Didn't talk about that. And I'd worked in radio and television and I told a little bit about that, and I didn't really explain why I'd come back to New Zealand. But then it was Virginia's turn, and she told everybody about Cave Creek, which was one of the most terrible disasters that ever happened in New Zealand. And I knew very little about it because I was living in London at the time. But her only son was on that platform at Cave Creek that crashed down on the west coast. And so she and Harry, her husband, lost their only son, who was 16. So you can't imagine, you know, how terrible that would be. But I, in London, had had not the same kind of tragedy, but my husband had died, aged 30. So I wasn't kind of frightened of of someone who was grieving, if you know what I mean. And so I felt quite close to Virginia, and I talked to her. And at the end of the weekend, we realised that, you know, we had something obvious in common, but we also had gardening in common, because we both found gardening an amazing therapeutic thing. And so at the end of this weekend, I said to her, let's keep in touch, but let's write to each other once a month about our gardens. Because if I just said, oh, let's, you know, keep in touch, it would have all fizzled out. But she sent me these extraordinary letters about living in the high country of northern North Canterbury on a large sheep farm with her husband. And the letters were full of things like mustering in the moonlight with their on horseback, or losing a dog in a snowdrift, or cutting up a whole cattle beast, you know, feeding the shearers, stuff like this that none of the people that I knew and people in the office that I worked in at the time, we didn't know anything about it. And I used to get these emails from her, and all the people in the office would gather around to read them because they were so amazing to us people who were office workers in Wellington. And after we've been doing this for about a year, I said to my publisher, look, I think this would make a book, because it's the difference between town and country and the way we live. And my publisher said, well, she's obviously got stories to tell, but can she write? This is the kind of thing publishers say.
Okay. Well, she's been writing these letters.
I know, But I said to the publisher, yes, she can write, but she doesn't know that she can write. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. She doesn't think of herself as a writer. And I can help her with that. I can, you know, show her what is required to make the letters the right length, to make the book work as a book. Leave it to me. And so I did that, and so the first book came out, and it's called Common Ground, and it is a lovely book. I think it works.
It's just lovely. It's nice. It's just a heartwarming kind of, and also, as you say, as you both started gardening as a kind of therapy. And I think a lot of us gardeners do start out that way.
I think so too.
Just to get back to the land and take time out and start growing things.
Yeah, it's a kind of meditation, isn't it, out there? You're just sort of in your own world. So that was...
That's how it started.
It's how it started, and it's been going ever since. I mean, since then, I've written newspaper columns for the Herald on Sunday, so that was every Sunday, which was funny because I was writing them from Wellington. And we've both had a column in House and Garden magazine, a whole page of House and Garden magazine, for 7 years, which is just amazing. But for me, the big change was in realizing what a kick I got out of helping people put their ideas down on paper. So I set up my own business doing that, so not just for Virginia, but, you know, anybody who had a story to tell, who wanted help with telling it. I've sort of set up a website, so they come to me and I help them do it. And more I'm finding, I get people who want to write about their gardens. I get people who want to write about their pets, which is a fantastic way of writing about yourself. You know. I get people, obviously, who want to write about their families or their work or something. But I get lots and lots of people who want to write picture books. Picture books are the big thing that people want to write.
Yeah.
And a lot of people think that they can write. You know, they think, oh, it's easy, I'll write a picture book. And, of course, it's not actually that easy.
It's probably one of the hardest things.
Yeah. But I help a lot of people do that. And very successfully, too. You know, some of my students, if you like to call them that, have won awards and things. So
that's amazing, Janice. Now, so obviously you're an established author and writer. Can I ask how many books have you sort of published?
Right.
Well, when did you start writing?
I always find that a difficult question to answer because I've published lots of sort of novel-type books that take a long time to write.
Right.
And how many of those have I published? Maybe about 12, 15.
Mm-hmm.
But I also have written a huge number of what I call readers, which are used in schools.
Yeah.
You know, they're little books. Yeah, and I couldn't possibly tell you how many of those I've written.
Don't worry. But, like, when did you start writing?
I started writing when my own son was about 10. And he has now had his 40-something birthday.
Okay.
And I started writing then because he was getting on my nerves and he was just filling my life with impossible demands. And we had a crazy school holidays once. At that stage, I was a teacher and we had a school holidays, so I had a holiday as well.
That's a good thing about being a teacher.
It used to be. It's not so much anymore. No. Teachers seem to work all holidays now as well. But anyway, we had a holiday together and we went from Wellington up to Mount Ruapehu with a friend of his in the car. And both boys behaved really badly in the car. And so we invented this game where we were all different characters. And I was the super bossy, embarrassing mother. And they were these different characters that they'd invented. And by the time we got up to the mountain, we kind of had these characters, you know, in our heads. And when the boys went playing and rushing around, we were staying at the school camp place, the Forest and Bird Lodge up there. And the boys were just having a great time. And I sat down on my bunk bed.
Yes.
And I worked out how I could make these characters into a book.
Ah.
And that did become my first book.
Your first book. What was that called?
Which is so battered and bruised, it's falling apart. It's called Letters to Leslie.
Oh, Letters to Leslie.
Yeah. And it's a funny book for, like, older kids.
My name is Henry
Jollifer,
and I guess my life is pretty boring and dull, except that my mum suffers from enthusiasms. I'll tell you more about them later. My New Year's resolutions are, 1, have peace and quiet, 2, get rich, 3, marry my mum off so she's not my responsibility so much.
And so that's what that book is all about, how he achieves those aims.
Very old and battered.
It is. That is extremely battered copy. But that started me writing because that book was very popular and it was translated into lots of different languages. So, in fact, I still get emails from people in Mexico, for instance, saying that they've just read the book. Yeah, it's very, very strange how that happens. And so I wrote 2 other books about Henry Jollifer. And that sort of established me as a writer. And I haven't stopped since, really.
Yeah, well, once you start, you can't really stop. You've got to tell more stories and finish off your other ones.
Yeah.
Well, Janice, we'll have a break right there. We're going to listen to Carole King singing It Might As Well Rain Until September, and we'll be right back.
What should I write? What can I say? How can I tell you how much I miss you? The weather here has been as nice as
it can be. Although it doesn't really matter much to me. For all the fun I'll have while you're so far away, it might as well rain until September. I don't need sunny skies for things I have to do, 'cause I stay home the whole day long and think of you. As far as I'm concerned, each day's a rainy day, so it might as well rain until September. My friends look forward to their picnics on the beach.
Hey, Jenna, so getting back to your gardening books, now, like, there are letters back and forth between you and Virginia. And in your latest one, Common Lives? No, Changing Lives. Your lives changed because Virginia moved to a new place and you moved up to Auckland from Wellington. And I just want to ask you, how did you find moving up from Wellington to Auckland and gardening up here?
Well, it's totally different kind of gardening. Totally different. Like, in Wellington, I grew ripe, beautiful tamarillos or tree tomatoes.
Mm.
I can't grow them in my Mount Eden garden because it gets frost.
Yes.
So, like, this is astounding to say that my Wellington garden was actually warmer than my Auckland garden. And it's not really warmer, but it doesn't get frost. Or my Wellington garden didn't get frost at all. And I could grow things more into the autumn than I can here. And tree tomatoes, I've tried twice to grow them up here because I love them. And I can't grow them up here. So that's interesting. But the other thing I can't grow up here is tomatoes. Now, I don't understand this because other people can, but my soil seems to produce blight. My tomatoes get blight. And I've done everything to get rid of it, including, you know, planting mustard and stuff to
blight is
clean
like
the soil.
A fungus?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I don't have much luck with... I get one crop of tomatoes early in the season and then the plants just keel over and die. Whereas in Wellington, I would always pull my tomatoes out of the ground on Anzac Day or around then and just hang them up over the trellises and, you know, all the ones that hadn't ripened so far would ripen and I'd have tomatoes into June in Wellington. And somehow that's not happening for me in Auckland. But apart from that, the weather is much better up here. I have to say the weather is much better up here. And I do enjoy being in my garden. However, I do have a problem because I live on the side of Mount Eden. And I dig and then I think, oh no, there is a giant boulder under here and I cannot plant what I wanted to plant here.
Instead of clay, which is where I have clay soil, you have got rocks.
I've got rocks and sand. I mean, the sand, it's like volcanic soil. It's black, but the texture of it is like sand. Water just goes straight through it. You know, it's very good for drainage. So I can grow things like echiums and sage and, you know, things
coastal that... plants.
Absolutely. Yeah. Anything that likes dry feet.
Yeah.
And so there's lovely flowers that I can and do grow. Yeah. But, I do need a crowbar.
I know that Wellington's quite windy, so did you notice, that's not so much windy around?
I notice that there is much less wind up here. It doesn't matter what people say. They say, no, you're not right, but I am right. I don't get as much wind. I don't get as much wind. And what we have up here are these things that my son calls fronts. And a front is a band of rain that comes across.
Yeah.
And he's got it on his phone. He'll say, now it's coming in 10 minutes and it'll only last about five, you know. And it does. It just comes across.
Yeah.
And Aucklanders kind of ignore the band of rain. They just stand under a tree and then it stops. Whereas in Wellington, when it starts raining, it'll rain for 3 days and then it will stop.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's quite different.
Bizarre. We're just so used to having four seasons in one day up here, kind of, that it just, you know, oh, it's raining. Oh, it'll just rain up again. And then it starts, like, being windy and then maybe hailing.
Yeah.
And then the sun comes out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're kind of used to it. I might just share with you a book I'm reading at the moment. I'm not sure whether to share the gardening ones or this one. What do you want to know about? Confessions
yeah, okay.
of a Ghostwriter.
That that's quite interesting.
Okay, so I was reading this one lately. I'll finish reading it. Very interesting when you read a confession, because it's like things that people wouldn't ordinarily talk to you about. And it was part of a series. There were a lot of other confessions books. There was one on confessions of a male nurse, and he wrote another one called confessions of a school nurse, and like confessions of a constable. So people in professions, and they want to talk about or write about what actually goes on.
Mm.
So anyway, this one is Confessions of a Ghostwriter by Andrew Crofts. And he's, yeah, as he says, he's a ghostwriter. And what's a ghostwriter? Well, a ghostwriter is someone who writes books on behalf of other people. So, say, like a celebrity wants to write their autobiography, but of course, them being famous and busy, they don't have time to. So they call this ghostwriter in to write it for them, and they pay them, but their name doesn't go on the, you know, as the author on the cover. So it's like they wrote the story, or they told the story to the ghostwriter, and then the ghostwriter writes it. So yeah, so this guy Andrew Crofts, he's written like more than 80 books, yeah, and some of them have sold million copies all around the world, and some of them have become like top 10 hits on the Sunday Times, which is in the UK. Yeah, and he's telling all these stories of people, everyone from film stars to footballers, hitmen to hookers, world leaders to abused children. Ghostwriters are confidants to the most famous people on earth, and they help to give a voice to some of the most vulnerable and inspiring. In this book, Andrew confesses the truth about ghosting, how it feels to be an invisible author, to be given first-class tickets to travel anywhere and permission to ask whatever questions you like, giving an unrivaled peek into private worlds to which few others gain admission. Yeah, so I found that book really interesting. And I just wanted to know, if you as a writer, well, what do you think about ghostwriting?
Well, I have ghostwritten four books. For, now, I can't remember her name. This is the terrible thing. But she's an important soccer player, professional soccer player.
Right.
In the women's league. And she lives in Switzerland. She's a New Zealander.
Yes.
And she works for FIFA, which is what, I don't know what that stands for, but it's the Football,
Football Association.
Yeah. And I wrote these books for her, which were about being a young soccer player, a young female football player.
Yeah.
It was a very weird experience. What she had already written the book, sort of roughly, but she didn't have a clue how to, you know, make it.
Put it together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I just put together the raw material that she'd given me.
Mm.
But yeah, it's a funny thing to do. In the end, it's not satisfying.
Mm.
Like, it's a job you do simply for the money that you get for it.
Yeah.
It's not a job that gives you a lot of meaningful stuff in your life. You know? Yeah, I haven't done it since.
Okay.
But there is a huge amount of it goes on, you know.
Yeah.
Most celebrity biographies are ghostwritten.
Really. Yes, most of them. But you wouldn't know it because it doesn't say.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes it goes as told to so-and-so.
Yeah, yeah, they do.
But most of the time it's the famous person's name on the cover and you would have no idea. Well, yeah, you'd just assume that they wrote it.
Mm.
Mm, interesting. So you didn't find much satisfaction out of that. But this, well, this guy who's written 80 or plus books, Obviously he did, but then he also did confess, yes, he does write for the money. I mean, it's, he has to make a living, I suppose.
Yeah.
But it's like, for him, it was like the thrill of the unknown and finding interesting people to tell their stories.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was what made it satisfying for him, even though, yeah, you think, oh, well, you're just writing for someone else. Yeah, so, I don't know, maybe different people, writers have a different take, but obviously he enjoys doing, otherwise he wouldn't, keep on with it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think for myself, I'd rather help people write their own stories, you know, than write the story for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So that is quite a different attitude to it, isn't it?
Yeah. Because they get put the input into it and actually go and type it and put the sentences together. You're just kind of helping and supporting them.
But also, you know, they make sure that the stuff that goes into the book is what they want to go in the book. Yeah.
I think there's an element of trust, isn't there?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Maybe it's for time poor people. I can't, you know, I don't have time.
Yeah.
Have someone else do it, but I'll pay them lots of money. I don't know exactly how lucrative it is, but this guy thought it was worth his while.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Oh, Janice, you've got a huge pile of books there. That must be your children's ones. Can I just see what different...
What have I brought here? Yeah. I've brought Monstrosity, which is about a kid who just gets up to trouble. It's a funny book. It's a very funny book. That's a sort of love affair book about a boy who's just learnt to drive and has a terrible accident, but there we are. That one called Taking Off is about a girl who's losing her sight, and she helps her uncle fly a plane in an emergency. This one is definitely my favourite book. This is, I think, my most significant book. It's called Thor's Tale, and it's about the two boy whalers, or the two boys on the whaling station in South Georgia in 1912, who met Shackleton and the three remaining men on his party, the guys who came across South Georgia to at the end of their...
historical tale.
Yeah. It's the story of Endurance, Shackleton's boat in Antarctica, but it's all told from the point of view of that boy on the whaling station, which means I had to make that up because obviously there isn't anything written. But it says in Shackleton's diary that the very first people they met when they returned after 18 months being missing and away over these impossible mountains that nobody had ever climbed on this island, the first people they met were two boys. And I thought, and they were aged about 12, and I thought, what on earth were those boys doing on that whaling station? What was life like for them? They were Norwegian boys. It was a Norwegian whaling station.
Oh, wow.
And so I went into that really deeply. And actually, after the book had been published, it's, you know, it's got a lot about whaling in it and a lot about Antarctica. And after the book had been published, I got an email from someone who lives 6 months of the year on South Georgia now. She mans the museum that's there, that's opened for these Antarctic tour boats that pull in there, because that's where Shackleton's buried. So there's a certain amount of kind of Shackleton memorabilia there. And I got this email from her, and she said, everybody's talking about your book down here. Nobody can remember when you visited. And I wrote back and said, I have never visited.
Oh, imagination. That's a good thing. Yeah. Well, Janice, I'm sorry that's all we have time for, but if you Google or put in the library catalogue, Janice Marriott, you'll find a lot of her books in there, and I'm sure everyone will enjoy finding more of your stories in the library. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Selena.
Happy reading, everyone.